Welcome to Inside the Match, where Alex and Simone talk residency applications.
We are two residents here to help you navigate the match.
For each podcast, we'll bring you residents from various specialties and backgrounds to give advice.
So today we are super excited to have Sonia, who's going to talk all about going through the match journey, not just once, but twice. Something that people are really saddened by and really get depressed in a situation where they're trying to figure out where to go for help and not sure how to find it. So thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
So can you briefly describe your match journey and path to the match?
So I am a US IMG. I actually went abroad for a year in high school and then decided it was kind of fun and exotic and realized that medical school is a lot cheaper in Switzerland, which is where I went to medical school, and ended up staying over there. I always kind of knew I wanted to come back. I, to be completely honest, did not anticipate the difficulty that would pose and the hurdles that studying abroad really puts in your path for medicine. So I finished medical school over there. I started working over there actually as a resident. Their system's a little different, but resident equivalent basically, and took step one and then step two and then applied to the match once and then a second time. Now I did not come from a school that had any pathway to American residency or American medicine in and of itself. So it was just kind of me trying to figure it out on my own. And I have no one in my family who's done this before. So I really had no idea what I was getting myself into. I was just like, I'm gonna do this. And then realized one, it was very expensive, and two, it was really hard. So I applied to emergency medicine the first go around. And while I had been lucky enough to, by kind of a fluke, secure a sub-I at an American emergency department, I had only been able to do that one. So all of my other rotations had been abroad in Europe and in the Seychelles. That was sort of what happened. And I applied very, very broadly, really kind of without any bias as to like location or type of program. I was just like, I'm applying everywhere because I knew that going into this, that was what I had to do. And I'm not the greatest test taker and ever have been. So my test scores are not competitive test scores. And so I applied the first time and I don't remember the exact number, but it was somewhere in the ballpark of 150, I don't know, all emergency medicine, and didn't get a single interview. And in fact, really didn't hear from most programs, which I'm sure most people going through this. And then I sort of was like, okay, well, I guess I have to do this again. So I applied again a second time, and I did change tweaks, and we can talk about that in a little bit. But obviously, I'm still the same person. I still had the same test scores. I still had the same trajectory. And I ended up applying to a broader subject matter. So I applied to IM, FM, and some EM. But to be completely frank, I kind of was like, all right, well, I clearly don't have the test scores for EM, so I'm just going to have to abandon. But that also took a lot of self-reflection. Like, can I do IM? Can I do FM? Do I want to do that? Like, can I get excited about outpatient sort of situation? And then I ended up applying a second time. There I applied to ballpark of 170. Again, really broad. I wrote, you know, different personal statements for the different types of programs I was applying to, and didn't get a single interview. Basically had kind of reconciled myself to not coming back to the United States. And I was, my whole family's here. I mean, I have aunts and uncles in Europe, but everyone else, you know, my siblings, my parents are all in America. And I was just like, well, I guess that's it. And I had found a job that was working for me. I was promoted. So I was kind of like a chief resident attending fellow kind of position. It's again, not quite the same. My boss at the time was like, oh, well, there's this week you were telling me about, like the scramble or the soap, right? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, okay. And so she gave me the week off.
Wow.
I was like, wait, what? She's like, you have to be available, right? I mean, you told me like they would call. And I was like, I mean, I don't know that I'm going to apply. She's like, no, you have to apply. And I was like, oh, okay. And I mean, honestly, I had gotten to this point where I was kind of like, I mean, I guess that's it, right? Like you apply to 300 and something programs and like, clearly it's not working out. As a last ditch effort, I did some Googling. I figured out which programs were IMG friendly, you know, whatever that means. and, you know, SOAP opened and those were the ones I applied to. And I had laryngitis and didn't have much of a voice. And I get a phone call on a number that I had set up. I had set up a Skype number that was an American number so they could call me as an American number. And then it relayed to my European number. And I see it's a Skype number calling and I answer and it's program director, and I'm like frantically Googling where this guy's calling me from. Like, I had no idea. I had no idea. And it was, I think, an 11 or 12 minute interview, me frantically Googling where this place is. Funny story, that the place that I that called me had their like residency websites behind a firewall, so you couldn't actually access them from abroad.
Oh my goodness.
Couldn't figure out any information. And he's like, well, do you have any questions for me, like at the end? And I was like, I can't not ask anything, and I can't ask something that's clearly on the website. and you know, he, so that was kind of that, and that ended up being where I went to residency. So, you know, not the typical trajectory, because I didn't do a ton of interviews, I didn't, you know, do the interview trail. I it ended up getting me to fellowship eventually. I mean, residency and now fellowship. So,
wow, that's incredible. And just you sharing that makes me think about all the times in that moment where I would have just felt like I had to give up and move on. So how did you keep a positive attitude?
You know, I think that's a really good question. And I think ultimately there's no like one size fits all. And I think a lot of it has to do with like every now and then there was like moments where I probably would have been like, yeah, I'm good. Like, all right, fine. I don't know. I'll figure something else out. And then there was that one person, like that boss who's like, you're going to get the week off. And I was like, what? I like hadn't even thought about that. And, you know, these little things. So I think for me, it was ultimately the bits and pieces of support that I got, which I just think sometimes you don't really know. I mean, we have this like cliche, you know, you don't know what other people are going through kind of situation, which is its own sort of box. But it really gives you the idea of like, sometimes you can just say like one little thing, like, hey, I get it. I know it's frustrating. I know it's hard, but you know, you've got this. And I think that was kind of what I needed from her at that time. But I also, for me, it was just knowing that I needed to try this. And I was really, really homesick. And I mean, I was in Europe for a long time, and, you know, I'd established myself there and I'd done everything. It was a lot of knowing that for me, this was what I needed. And people, you know, I had people ask me like, why do you want to go back to America? Healthcare there is defensive medicine. Everyone gets sued. Why would you want to do that? I heard it all. And it was just like, I want to go home. And that for me was, I knew I needed that. And I also knew that I wanted the type of education that residency programs offer here. And I wanted to become that kind of physician.
And you did, you mentioned the fact that you may not have had the support in regards to applying that you may have had coming from a United States medical school. And so many people try to figure out where they can find mentors or someone to advocate for them during this process. So where do you recommend that an international medical graduate goes to find that advocate for them during this journey?
You know, I wish there was like a, hey, this is the way you have to do it sort of roadmap, just the way I wish there was that way for applying to residency or fellowship for that matter. COVID obviously has changed things a little bit. I went to as many international conferences as I could. I got active on social media, mainly on Twitter. That sort of seemed to be the one modality that kind of let me interact with people. But yeah, then I went to international conferences. I talked to people. I said, hey, this is my story. This is what I'm doing. I ended up utilizing a friend of a friend of a friend who basically emailed me a list of people. And he's like, hey, why don't you talk to these people? And I literally planned a trip through America, stopping at all these cities and being like, hey, I'm in town for coffee. Like, would you like to get coffee? But like, I didn't tell them that I flew to that city for them. Like, I was like, oh, you're like, I'm in town. You want to get like, And I was like, so what do you recommend? And I mean, I wouldn't say that any of that yielded like a residency program or like a mentor that I still talk to today. But for me, it was a lot of, you know, learning to put yourself out there. And I think residency, the match and this with that whole process is a lot of like, learning what your elevator pitch is, like learning what is your 45 seconds to be like, this is who I am, this is what I can do, this is why you want me. And I think, you know, I remember when I was interviewing with my residency, who ended up becoming my residency program director, it was a moment at the end of this phone call where he says, you know, I really, really hope you consider coming to our program. We'd be really lucky to have you. And it was this moment where, you know, everything got flipped around, because it was like, it wasn't me as the applicant like begging to be hired. It was suddenly like a program being like, hey, you're a really great candidate. We'd love to have you. And I was like, wait, I get to think about this. I get to decide. So I think a lot of it too is like, you know, you can find a mentor. Like if you sent me, like people are like, I'll be your mentor. I, I think it's an organic relationship. It has to develop. So I think some of it is you have to be active and you have to go out there and find stuff and be interested. And some of it is you might not find that person. You might not find that mentor who's going to help you, but, you know, use people the way that they can. Like if it's somebody offering to read a personal statement and give you a couple of feedbacks, use it. If you don't like what they tell you, ignore it. But I think if you can't find one person who embodies the whole mentor, find, you know, sort of bits and pieces of the mentor in experiences and in situations. And I think if we're coming from abroad, we're not going to have that. We're not going to have that mentor that kind of walks you through the process of applying.
When you were interviewing with this program director who called you on a whim, it really showcases your ability to answer questions on the fly without much preparation. So are there questions that he asked you that led you to tell your story about reapplying? Or are there things that you talked about being an international medical graduate that are beneficial that other people can relay when having conversations?
Something along the lines of like, why do you think, you know, what's the reason that you've gone unmatched? Like, why are we having this conversation? And what do you think are the red flags in your application that led people to either not interview you or not want to hire you once they interviewed you? And I was frank and I said, you know, I haven't been interviewed. And we kind of talked about, I think this goes for everybody. You have to know objectively what your red flags are. And I'm not just talking about test scores. I'm talking about other things too. Like I'm a little bit older. So I knew that was going to be something that can be both construed positively and negatively. You need to know that. So you need to be really objective about what your application looks like. And that I think is something that sort of strangers can help you with, because they can look at you and be like, okay, these are the things that I'm like, wait, I don't understand. And that doesn't mean that they're all bad. It's just, these are the things that are going to raise questions. And, you know, when program directors are getting inundated with like 3,000, 4,000 applications, they're not looking at everything, right? They have to weed out. And unfortunately, they do use test scores a lot for that. So I know that like most of my applications didn't get looked at because my test scores just didn't meet the cutoff. I know that. But even if you get past that cutoff, you have to know what are the things where they're going to be like, I don't have the time to delve into this. I can't, or I don't want to, or, you know, this could be a problem for this reason. So I think you really have to identify what those quote unquote red flags are and then determine, are they actually red flags? Like, are they actually things that the program needs to be worried about? Or are they things that I can utilize to my advantage? So I know that, for instance, for sort of quote unquote older candidates, one of the concerns can be like, you're set in your ways. You don't want to be told how to do things anymore. You're not in that sort of training mentality. And so how can you talk about that in an interview by turning it around? So don't necessarily say I'm old and set in my ways, obviously, but like turn that around and talk about how you receive feedback, how you are flexible, how you're willing to train, how you're willing to learn, because that's what you're here for. So I think a lot of it is identifying that and then kind of utilizing that to go forward. And then I think some of it too is reflective, and this goes a little bit into what I tell people about personal statements too, I think, is recognizing like what qualities in yourself brought you to pick medicine, and then what qualities in yourself brought you to pick your specialty. So it's less about like what you've done. And I mean, that's important, but like they see that on your application. So it's about, you know, who are you? So who is the physician who will stand at a patient's bedside and tell them what's going on, or, you know, help figure out a differential, or work in a team, or supervise an intern, or, you know, be the intern? Who is that physician? And what are you bringing to the table that nobody else can bring to the table? And what does that constellation look like? And what, you know, what is the continuity? So you're the common denominator, right? You're the one applying to med school, to residency and fellowship or jobs or whatever it is, but you're that common denominator. So you're bringing something to the table, and that common denominator, I think for yourself, you really have to know what that is and then figure out how to package that in a way that conveys that to whoever is, you know, interviewing you or reading your personal statement.
Well, what I've learned about all that you have said is that your program director made an incredible decision, and calling you and choosing you and you choosing them was such an amazing opportunity. And it just shows you that you never know when your opportunity is going to come. Maybe not the first time, maybe not the second time, but you stayed positive and you had that one person who gave you the week off, and also deserves the appreciation to be able to understand that the soap and the scramble are not easy and they don't call at a specific time of day.
True.
Well, is there anything else that you would like to add about the entire process for those that are reapplying?
I wouldn't say don't give up hope. I don't think that's the right sort of version of what to say, but I think ultimately it is, you know, this path may look like it's never been walked before. Like you're looking at a forest and you're like, there's no way that anyone has done this before me. And I promise people have, like, it is possible. And I'm not going to pretend that it was easy or that it was, you know, not fraught with its own complications. If this is what you want, if this is who you are, if this is the path that you really want to walk, you got to just keep going, because ultimately that's the only sort of solution. And if you end up deciding, hey, you know what, I've done this twice and I don't want to do it a third time, or I've done this once and I don't want to do a second time, that's okay too. I think it's okay to get to a point where you're like, you know what, I don't need to do it this way. But I think if it is who you are and what you want to do, you owe it to yourself and to what you've gone through to get to where you are, to just continue to do that and to reach out. I mean, there are plenty of people, you know, on Twitter or wherever, who may not be able to give you an hour or 2 hours of their time, but they may be able to give you that little like, hey, it's all right, I get it.
Well, this has been incredible. And I so appreciate your honesty and your transparency when it comes to what you've gone through. And it must have made the fellowship application process seem that much more enjoyable and easier.
Yeah. I mean, sort of in retrospect, because honestly, there was obviously some anxiety, but the fellowship process, for those of you who are like, I'm never doing this again, it's very different.
And you have a lot of mentors and advocates from residency that are there to also vouch for you.
Yeah. And that does certainly helps. It does.
Well, Sonia, you've shared so much about this residency journey, but we want you to share one last thing. Can you share a fun fact about yourself, totally unrelated to medicine?
When I was about 3 or 4, there was a delay in shooting part of a movie because I stole Edward Scissorhands, like scissor gloves, because I thought they were really cool. So.
That is pretty cool. That's a great.
It was a short delay because I was a toddler, but you know, I was like, I want these.
Well, that's all the time we have today with Sonia. Thanks for joining us at Inside the Match. Special thanks to Kevin McCoy for the music, and be sure to follow or subscribe to our podcast. Catch our next podcast to learn more application tips and hear from another resident, fellow, or leader in medical education.